This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Alliance Defending Freedom. Our religious liberty is under attack today like never before, but Alliance Defending Freedom is fighting the critical court battles that protect not only our freedom, but the freedom of our children and grandchildren. Please call with your best gift today and help support the Freedom Fund, which provides Alliance Defending Freedom the resources to fight and win back our liberty in court. Call 800-636-4042. That's 800-636-4042. Or click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at janetmefford.com. Thank you.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for being with us. Former President Reagan once said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States where men were free. Well, millions of us today hear that quote with maybe new ears in our day because we're convinced we are losing freedom here in America because the evidence of that is all around us. And many of us also would agree that we're losing the soul of America as rising voices of progressives challenge so much and want to erode so much of what millions of us hold dear and what truly has made America great. What do we do, though, about the erosion of our home? That's really the question we're going to explore today with Bruce Fronin, who is the Ella and Ernest Fisher Professor of Law at Ohio Northern University's Pettit College of Law. And today we'll be talking about his new book with Ted McAllister, Coming Home, Reclaiming America's Conservative Soul. Professor Fronin, it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really happy to be here, Janet.
Thank you. Well, you say conservatism has never been the only voice in America, which is true, but it's the most distinctively American voice. How so? How is that the case?
Well, conservatism is about certain permanent goods. Faith, family, and freedom is the way I usually put it. But most importantly, conservatism is a recognition that each of us is really a historical being. We become who we are because of our interactions with our communities, with our families, our churches, and our local neighborhood associations. And all that takes place within a context.
Right.
Not just our faith, although the faith is a very important element of that, but also the religion that comes from it, the culture that grows out of that. Because, you know, religion, it comes from a root that means to bind. It's the actual day-to-day practices in which we engage.
Right. That's right.
And our history supports who we are.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, when we talk today about conservatism, there are a lot of people who will say, well, what do you want to conserve? You want to conserve slavery? You want to conserve all the horrible sins that America has committed over the last 200 plus years? How do we respond about the historical context of conservatism and what we really are preserving as Americans or seek to preserve?
Right. I mean, that's such an important question because so many of our children are being brought up in schools where this is taught every day.
Yes.
And too many of us bow before this because clearly a lot of bad things happened in the past, as they always have, because original sin remains present with us at all times.
Right.
And that's, I think, another reason why the left is so hostile and sometimes comes absolutely unhinged at the fight for the unborn, because if we come to realize the great evil that's being done in our own society, that makes previous issue evils look not so out of line.
Right, right.
It shows that we haven't suddenly become these angelic creatures who are wonderful, where before we used to be ignorant and horrible.
Yeah.
There have always been sins.
Well,
and
that's
that
right.
That does not mean that we weren't a great country.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it would be very hard to continue on the track of progress, progress, progress if you had to stop and admit that we murdered over 60 million babies in the course of the last 40 some years.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's true. And when you talk about the crisis of our time being called homelessness, I thought that was a really good way to put it. Can you expound on that and why you believe that really is the metaphor for our times when it comes to conservatism and losing the conservative soul?
Sure, because if you look at the trends that have taken place over the last few decades toward globalization, right, shipping jobs offshore, making each of us in a cog in this globalist machine, the whole idea of a citizen of the world, everything becoming a national issue from educating our kids to where we can worship, it's all about taking us out of our natural homes.
Yeah.
Both geographically, because most of us come from somewhere, even a gypsy like I've ended up becoming, academics move all over the place. And whether I like it or not, I've become quite the gypsy over the years. I still remember where I grew up. I still hold tight to that and have dreams of going back. But most of us have a sense of geography and wherever we happen to be. Americans always have brought these skills of association that Tocqueville talked about. We've understood how to cooperate with each other, and that in itself is a kind of home.
Well, it is. You're really saying it right. I think a lot of us feel that way. And yet we see that America's conservative soul is now under attack. It isn't just a matter, I think, even those of us who can reflect back a couple of decades and say, well, there's always been a divide between the left and the right. But it's become so intense and so hate-filled and beginning to become violent. You know, what is going on? How do you believe we really got here? What is ailing us now that wasn't as pervasive as it's become today?
I think in the end, it's in one sense a natural progression of always trying to liberate the individual from all forms of oppression, right? That's what the left has always claimed to be doing. We're just trying to free people.
Yeah.
But in the end, what they're doing is they're freeing us from our very human nature. That's why you get same-sex marriage. That's why you get the family being seen as itself oppressive. And that's how you get the empowerment of these left-wing elites to tell us what to do, tell us how we can live our lives. So I think we just reached a point, and it was really, I think it was under Obama.
Yep.
Despite the fact that he was a pretty feckless president.
Yes.
He didn't do all that much.
No.
But all this talk about transformation really freed up their identity politics leftists to be fully themselves.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it seems to have accelerated so much lately. It's a natural progression, but they've really felt their oats in recent years.
Yeah, and yet a lot of us are looking at what's going on with the progressives and saying, why would you hate the United States? You guys are the people who are saying, if so-and-so gets elected, I'm moving to another country. They never move to another country. As we all know, they stay put in their, you know, multi-million dollar mansions in Malibu, and they never leave, or Silicon Valley, or wherever it is they're from, and they never really leave. And those of us who live maybe in flyover country are saying, what is so awful about America that you hate it so much? And is it really what you're saying here, that fundamentally they're wanting to deal with man in a way that denies human nature? Is that really what the driver of it all is, would you say?
That's what they're after. Now, of course, you know, one can always charge people with hypocrisy. Do they really mean it? Most people who want to have some totalitarian system, they simply assume they'll be the ones pulling the levers.
Yeah.
But I think it's a combination of the fact that they really do want to change these fundamental things, because if you're rich and well off, you think it's kind of cute. But I also think part of it is drama. It's the crybully syndrome.
Hmm.
Right? We talk about our kids in colleges as their snowflakes who are so fragile, right?
Yes.
But I've always preferred to call them crybullies, because it's the tactic. You're hurting me, therefore I get to shut you down.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
So the more they paint our history as evil, the more they paint what's going on as oppressing others, the more they deplatform us.
Well, and there's a lot of deplatforming going on. And is that tied also to this fundamental removal of America's past from who we are as a country, where there's this suppression of free speech increasingly on these big tech platforms, for example?
Right, right. Now, they believe that they're committed to something that's more important than free speech, and that's, you know, social justice.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, of course, the Constitution says nothing about social justice. It does, in fact, talk about freedom of speech.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And recognizing that freedom of speech and freedom of religion came from our Creator. That was what the founders believed. That was why it was there in the First Amendment. They seem to think it's something the government nicely grants to us until they recognize it's getting out of control. I mean, there's not even an understanding for a lot of these people what drove the founders to create the documents that have framed us for all of these years.
That's another aspect of our need, I think, to come home. We need to remember our history, which our kids aren't being taught in school. I mean, I teach people who've actually graduated from college, and they know nothing about their own history.
Yeah.
Instead, what they hear are the platitudes that come from these international citizen of the world elites who think that rights are things to be balanced against goods, and judges get to determine how much you get of which. It's very sad.
Well, it certainly is. I want to dive into that, remembering our history as Americans, when we come back from this break. Professor Bruce Fronin with us. Coming Home is the book. We'll be back on Janet Meffer Today after this. We love the work of Alliance Defending Freedom. And right now at Janet Meffer Today, we are asking you to donate to the Freedom Fund. We are trying to raise $7,500 for them. They do such wonderful work on behalf of so many Christians across the country who are finding themselves in the progressive crosshairs on issues like the sanctity of human life and marriage and family, the LGBT issue. You know all these names that we've talked about day after day after day. They take these cases for free. Can you imagine a lot of these people who are caught in these legal battles and they're looking at the possibility of having to fund an expensive legal fight and they don't have the funds for it? Well, ADF takes on their case for free. But as you know, these can be very expensive court battles. And I'm telling you, this is such a great way to show that you are a concerned American and a concerned Christian, because every battle that ADF wins in court, they're winning for you and me. It isn't just for the person they're defending. It's for you and for me. When the Jack Phillips case went to the Supreme Court and they won it, that was a victory for us. It really was, to say you can't show religious hostility against a Christian. And they fought for Jack after he was targeted again when he got back to Colorado and was asked to make a transgender cake. And boy, he fought back, and now it's over. So it's a wonderful, wonderful way to show your support for Alliance Defending Freedom. We would ask you to call this number, 800-636-4042. 800-636-4042. Your gift will help defend your freedom and provide the resources that are needed to fight these critical court battles. And they really need your financial support. The other side has so much money. They have so much money. Please help us help Alliance Defending Freedom. It would mean a lot to me. 800-636-4042. 800-636-4042. Or there is an Alliance Defending Freedom banner you can click over at my website, janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Meffer Today. Great to have you with us, and great to have with us Professor Bruce Fronin. He is a professor at Ohio Northern University's Pettit College of Law and co-author of Coming Home, Reclaiming America's Conservative Soul. Boy, this is such an important subject. And we were talking a little bit before the break, Professor Fronin, about the need for Americans to remember our history. And you were mentioning that you often come across students who don't know much about history, and you can blame that on a lot of the way they were educated coming in. But what about our history really needs to be taught again? There is a lot of history to teach. We see in the universities they want to focus on certain subjects and not others. But what would you highlight for a good education for an American?
Well, I think specifically as an American, as someone who teaches constitutional law, I'm rather fond of the idea of teaching the actual truth of where our Constitution comes from.
Yes.
But it really goes across the fields. If you look at history courses, which all our students take, they're not taught the basic stream, the mainstream of American history. Instead, they're taught history from the point of view of various oppressed peoples.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that things like slavery didn't exist and weren't evil. But what they're not taught is the mainstream. All right. The problem with slavery was that it was, in fact, an evil and a mark on something that was, in fact, good. Mm-hmm. It went against our own legal traditions, our own religious traditions. the form of slavery that existed in the South was a violation of natural laws that have been recognized by Christians for generations.
Yes.
So they don't understand the broad history. They get literature, but they don't get real literature.
Yeah.
they read Why Me books and various modern silliness,
yes.
Frankly.
Yep.
But they don't read classic works. Shakespeare has been all but banned from the college curriculum.
Mm.
So it really is just about everything that has been twisted in on itself. And one of the problems I see is that even if you look at something that seems good, like the emphasis on STEM subjects now,
yes,
it's just another way to crowd our patrimony out of the curriculum. It's important for people to understand math and science, but not to the exclusion of what makes us Americans.
Well, and what's interesting about our current age is they are taking a lot of things, like you mentioned, STEM subjects, and turning it into a battering ram against certain groups. For example, when you talk about what's being removed from the curriculum in various universities, for example, where you can't get Shakespeare, now it becomes, you can't teach white men. You can't teach what a white man has written. Well, if that is the bottom line, you don't want to teach white men because, God forbid, what you're really saying is I can't teach anything about the United States. I mean, all the founders were white men primarily. So what do you do with that? You've just told people you don't need to know anything that white men have ever said. That's preposterous.
It's preposterous. It's also really, really bigoted.
And very bigoted. Yep. Yeah, it is.
It's simply useful for their political position, so they're trying, frankly, to make us ignorant.
I agree.
They don't know and don't appreciate, again, this is what I would say is our home, our historical home, where we came from, and what has shaped our lives today.
Well, and when you talk about slavery, for example, they will go back to slavery and all the horrors of, you know, bringing people over from Africa and enslaving them and all the things that we've all acknowledged were horrible and against our traditions, as you just mentioned. What they don't want to talk about is we fought a civil war to make it right. And we self-corrected. I mean, you know, and then we overturned certain laws and certain bad court decisions. And the history is trying to move in the right direction. But it seems as if America doesn't get a lot of credit for that with these progressives.
No, because it's never enough. And that's the thing about progress. There's always another hill that we need to climb.
Yes.
So, however we got where we are, well, you're still not there, buddy.
Right.
So you're still no good unless you listen to me on this next one.
You're still in trouble. Can you talk a little bit about when we're talking about recovering and reclaiming America's conservative soul? One of the great crises, culturally speaking, in our country right now is the crisis of the natural family, where you are increasingly seeing babies born out of wedlock. You're seeing abortion on demand. You've got the Obergefell decision trying to redefine the fundamental human institution of man-woman marriage. And now we're seeing the fallout, especially in that last category, when you use the word cry bullies. Those are the first people I thought of. We're victims. And I'm thinking, you guys control everything. What are you talking about? Everything you guys want in the activist world you get because everybody's scared of you. But what about the importance of the family and the crumbling of the family in America and how that plays into this crisis as well? Because how do you hold a country together with any kind of values when the family is fractured?
Well, you don't. You end up everyone being a ward of the state, which is, of course, very much in keeping with what a socialist is going to want.
Yeah.
Because the state gets to tell you what's fair and gets to teach you all the right values. So I think that sort of explains the motivation behind this. But the real question is what we can do about it. And that becomes more difficult the more this gets handed over to courts, which get to make things up on their own, and makes it very important who gets appointed to these judgeships, because we need to return to a kind of basic sanity among judges, which is a recognition of the limits of their authority.
Yes.
There's no way on God's green earth that the Supreme Court should be able to decide for every American jurisdiction that they must issue marriage licenses to whoever wants it.
Right.
That's just not in keeping with our constitutional structure.
No.
So part of it is we simply have to reclaim our constitutional structure. And that's going to take a lot of political fighting. Obviously, though, that's not going to be enough. The hard work is things we do every day, you know, trying to keep our own families together, trying to work in our communities, work in our churches to support the natural family. And it's tough to talk about that because it's not the sort of thing that has your praises sung in the media for doing it. In fact, you're going to do it with a lot of hostility.
Sure.
But it's the day-to-day work that we have to carry on.
Well, in light of what we mentioned before when we were talking about tech giants suppressing speech and, you know, all the things that we're seeing going on all around us, I think one of the power bases that they use a lot of times, not just the tech giants, but progressives in general, is, you know, the Alinsky rules, where you have marginalization and polarization and freezing people and all these things that we talked about during the Obama years. But it works. That's the problem. You get a lot of conservatives who say this isn't worth the fight because I don't want my family being doxxed and I don't want to be fired from my job and these sorts of things. So what I mean, for many of us, we ask the question, what do you do about that? When you get to that level, now we're at a whole uncharted territory here for a lot of us, and we're not really sure what to do.
Yes, I understand. And it's a big problem because social media is just everywhere.
Yeah.
And part of the answer, unfortunately, has to be, you know, turn off your smartphone.
Sure.
We simply have to engage with it less, but we also have to develop our own parallel structures. This has been done many times before in history. It's a terrible thing that it has to be done, but we have to get down to the hard work of constructing our own schools.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You know, I happen to be a Catholic, and my kids have gone to Catholic schools. But you know what? All too often, Catholic schools are being shut down because the bishops don't care about them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
My kid's school just got shut down.
Really?
And I'm really mad about it.
Oh, boy.
And
oh, boy.
We're taking some action about it. But when that happens, that's when charter schools are for. We have to change the state and local laws so that we can have more charter schools. We can have more classical academies.
Yes.
We have to fight for our own institutions. That's why homeschooling has become so important.
That's right.
Because it's a way that we can keep our families together.
That's right.
And, you know, homeschooling has to be a social activity. It's not something you just do in your own home, as I'm sure you're fully aware.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
The homeschooling groups I know of, they're incredibly social.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And we support one another.
Yeah, and that's what we have to do. We have to build on that.
Well,
and that's the work of generations.
You're so right. It's a rebuilding process as well as a public fight. What role do you believe churches or pastors ought to play in resetting the foundations? I mean, when you talk in your chapter about why we need religion, fundamentally, mm-hmm. when you go back to understanding human nature, for example, that really is a biblical question. When we're talking about original sin,
right.
we have to bring God into it. So what
yep.
role can the churches and, you know, people in the churches play, the leaders and the laity?
Right. I mean, the difficult thing here is, on the one hand, you need to speak the truth, but on the other hand, you have to build coalitions. The problem is, too often in building coalitions, too many religious folk let the truth slide.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when you do that, the institution that you build, that you have to build, is flawed from the start in a way that you can't recover from. I think it's important for every congregation of whatever denomination to be really involved in teaching their kids. I am of the opinion myself that it's almost at the level of child abuse to send your child to a public school any longer.
Yeah, it is.
Because they're all run by a national curriculum. The teachers are trained according to a national system, and it's very hostile to everything that we stand for.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's more important. More churches, more congregations should be, if not making their own schools. I know an awful lot of Christian schools which are interdenominational among various Protestant denominations. And they do a lot of really important good work. And I think it's just really necessary for communities of faith to get together and in whatever way they can possibly manage it, to take control, to self-govern,
mm-hmm.
and bring up their kids.
That's it. But then that's really returning to America's conservatism when you talk about people being able to be the most free when they self-govern. That's one of the most American principles that we have is self-governance. And we need to recapture that as well.
Exactly right. And even if you look at where did the public schools come from, very early on, colonies actually had public schools. But what public meant then was the township.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, it was done by local taxation. Oftentimes, it was because they found a local benefactor. Oftentimes, they charged fees. but it was local schooling, and it was overtly religious because it was directly tied to the community, and the
community
was, in fact, religious.
You're right. Well, you got to read the book, Coming Home, Reclaiming America's Conservative Soul. Professor Bruce Fronin with us. So good to have you here, Professor Fronin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
It was my pleasure. God bless you. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today right after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Alliance Defending Freedom. Our religious liberty is under attack today like never before. But Alliance Defending Freedom is fighting the critical court battles that protect not only our freedom, but the freedom of our children and grandchildren. Please call with your best gift today and help support the Freedom Fund, which provides Alliance Defending Freedom the resources to fight and win back our liberty in court. Call 800-636-4042. That's 800-636-4042. Or click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at janetmefford.com. Thank you. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. There is a really interesting bill pending right now in Florida that would bar discrimination on the basis of religion in the state's public schools, even at the college level, with a specific emphasis on barring anti-Semitism. Campus Reform reported that HB 741 calls upon schools to treat such discrimination by students or employees or resulting from institutional policies motivated by anti-Semitic intent in an identical manner to discrimination motivated by race. Now, this comes at a time where we've not only seen anti-Semitic shootings at synagogues, but we've also seen public figures like Muslim Congresswomen Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib skewered for their public comments about Jews and the Holocaust. And we've seen Texas-based Imam Omar Suleiman invited to offer a recent invocation in front of the U.S. House of Representatives. This is the same man who accused Israel of being terrorists and posted in support of the Muslim Brotherhood. And let's not also forget that shocking video out of the Philadelphia Islamic Center that showed Muslim children saying they would kill as members of the army of Allah and chop off heads to liberate, quote unquote, the sorrowful and exalted Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. So is it time to legally crack down on anti-Semitism? We're going to get some thoughts on it all now from Islamic scholar Dr. Andrew Bostom, author of The Legacy of Jihad and the Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism. Dr. Bostom, great to welcome you back. How are you?
Very, very well. Thanks for having me on again, Janet.
Always good. Well, it's always good to talk to you, too. I know we have talked before about the rise of anti-Semitism in America, especially coming from the Muslim community. I'm curious for your thoughts on the need for this law in Florida that outlaws anti-Semitic speech in the schools. What do you make of it?
Well, I think unfortunately it is necessary. I'm not a big fan in general of hate laws, of hate crimes, et cetera.
Yeah.
I'm pretty libertarian when it comes to the First Amendment. On the other hand, these laws are already in existence. They're fait accompli. They're being exploited, by many groups, at the expense of often what's, frankly, much worse discrimination against Jews. If you look at the FBI's own statistics, it's so-called hate crimes. Again, if we're going to accept the idea, are much more common against Jews than any other religious group, certainly.
Yes, including
Muslims, even in the post 9/11 era.
By a long shot, too. Yeah, by a long shot.
And I think what's also happened, unfortunately, is that you're getting outbreaks that really meld into violence against Jews, against Jewish speakers that happen to be pro-Israel on campuses. You're getting their free speech at minimum shut down with the threat of violence. And I think it's really unacceptable. And if there's going to be a standard in terms of racial bigotry, then this needs to be applied to Jews as well, and I think that's effectively what this will do. In other words, if you look at the rhetoric that's frequently employed by the Boycott the Vest movement, by Students for Justice in Palestine, and these organizations are dominated by Muslims. They have a few really ridiculous and self-loathing leftist Jews that have joined them, but the rhetoric is very anti-Semitic. And it's been allowed, you know, sort of unfettered access on campuses. And I think that it's very, I think it's very savvy that this will now be applied to those kinds of organizations, which have really skewed the rational arguments about the state of Israel, and now have really gone into the realm of frank anti-Semitism.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But let's talk a little bit about the climate, because I'm, you know, the irony here is while Florida is trying to deal with anti-Semitism in the schools, which I think their intent is excellent because we need to do something about it. But on the other hand, you have Muslim congresswomen who have been all over the news saying things about the Jewish people in Israel and the Holocaust and crazy remarks like that. We have this Imam Suleiman who is just invited to give the invocation in front of the U.S. House of Representatives. I know that you have uncovered more information about him. But, you know, on the one hand, you say we're against anti-Semitism. Then what are you going to do about some of this Muslim theology that's being put out by these people who are in Congress and allowed into Congress to pray?
Well, that's why I'm glad you brought up Omar Suleiman, because I think his is the most striking example. You know, I had the miserable, I will tell you, it was a miserable experience last weekend of going through his lecture series on what he called the Bani Israel, which are really just the depictions of the Jews. And he's very clear about that, the Jews in the Quran, in the traditions of Muhammad. That's what his focus was on. 6 hours between the lectures and the Q&A that he took online in 2012, it's still sitting up there. It's very triumphal in terms of he knows, you know, what it takes. It takes an aardvark like myself to sit there and go through it and report to non-Muslims what he's saying, because yeah. It's a didactic tool. And basically, he uses the Quranic epithet for Jews as apes and pigs. And what he does is particularly heinous. So he moves beyond just labeling a specific group of Jews who disobeyed Allah egregiously in the Quran in two verses as apes or apes and pigs for disobeying the Sabbath, you know. And he moves well beyond that. And he says that since most Jews have this permanent Quranic trait of deceit, which is defined repeatedly in the Quran and in the Hadith, in the traditions, that the use of brothers of apes and pigs, as they were called by Islam's prophet Muhammad and his youngest wife, Aisha, and Suleiman specifically brings up this instance in terms of a greeting where, you know, there's a the Jews supposedly alter assalamu alaikum and change it into Arabic, a curse upon you. And Aisha responds to them, a curse on you too, brothers of apes and pigs. So what Suleiman says is that brothers of apes and pigs is perfectly legitimate. It's not a genetic trait. It's in terms of the original Jews that were converted in this fishing on the Sabbath incident described in the Quran. No. Their permanent trait is their Quranic trait of deceit, and therefore this is a perfectly appropriate epithet. And Muhammad actually used this epithet, brothers of apes and pigs, before as a threat to the Jews of the Banu Qurayza. And then, of course, he wound up defeating them, subduing them, and beheading 600 to 900 of their males. He used the same epithet when he dealt with the Jews of the Khaibar Oasis and defeated and humiliated them, too. It's taught at Al-Azhar University, the same sorts of understandings. That, in other words, it's a punishment. It was a punishment in ancient times, you know, for this specific instance, but it's more a punishment for this trait of deceit. And the fact that he laid this out and many other similar things and then tied it to the humiliation of Israel in the modern era in this series of lectures. And not to pat myself on the back, but I'm the only person that pointed it out. Thank God I saw that Melanie Phillips raised the issue in a column that she wrote in a paper in Israel. But other than myself, no one has pointed this out. And I have to say, Janet, that as recently as 5 years ago, you know, Imam addresses Congress known for calling Jews apes and pigs. That would have been a tabloid headline in the New York Post 5 years
ago. Yes, right.
We're so far beyond that now that no one even picks up this story. It's really quite shocking. But Flabe, you know, her her comments about the Holocaust were people, and I understand this, people could grasp onto those and understand her visceral hatred from another perspective. It's become increasingly known, I would say, over the last few decades, the involvement with the Palestinian movement and its godfather, Haji Amin al-Husseini, directly with the Nazis. I reproduced a headline from the New York Times from 1948, the day before Israel declared its independence, that the Times was warning that Jews from the entire global Muslim community, countries not in the Middle East, not just in the Middle East, but into Africa and Asia, were at risk. 900,000 Jews were at risk, and in fact, you know, were subjected to pogroms, etc., simply with the declaration of independence of the state of Israel.
Hang on just a moment. We do need to pause for a very quick break. We're going to come back with Dr. Andrew Bostom. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Just one example of a mom who came in, was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her. And she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, for her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Thank you for being with us. And there is no doubt that the rise of anti-Semitism is extremely disturbing. It's extremely vile. We have seen these shootings at synagogues, for example. It's absolutely reprehensible. It's good to see lawmakers in Florida wanting to do something about curtailing anti-Semitic speech in the schools with this bill they've proposed. But it brings up a broader question, and that is, what of the anti-Semitism that we're seeing in the broader culture and the mainstreaming of more anti-Semitic remarks and anti-Semitic speech, not just from people on the margins of society like some of these shooters, but what about the Muslim congresswomen like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and this Omar Suleiman, the imam from Texas, who was allowed to deliver an invocation in front of the U.S. House of Representatives just recently? We're talking it over with Islamic scholar Dr. Andrew Bostom. So you had mentioned Rashida Tlaib. Now, she had made this remark about the Holocaust. She did call it a tragedy, but she said she was just so glad that her Palestinian ancestors had done what they did to try to create a safe haven for the Jews. And I was reading this Hill article saying, wait a minute, the Jews were never given a safe haven in Palestine. As you mentioned, this mufti closely collaborated with Nazi propagandists. And as the Hill points out, they organized thousands of troops to form Nazi-backed auxiliary military and support units to decimate the Jews. So she's just not even telling the truth here.
Oh, it's horrific. It's 180 degrees from what's a very ugly truth, which is that Haji Amin al-Husseini, who was really the most renowned Muslim figure of the World War II era, and I'm talking about globally now, he went to Europe and not only gave vile speeches calling for Jew annihilation, kill every Jew wherever you find them. He helped organize Muslim brigades, particularly in the Balkans, that fought with their own SS units and slaughtered, you know, Jews that they could get their hands on, but Serbs as well. And he wanted to bring the jihad to the Middle East and slaughter the Jews of Palestine. In fact, these Nazi killing units called Einsatzgruppen, which executed thousands and thousands of Jews in Eastern Europe, were supposed to be brought into Palestine itself had the British been defeated in Egypt, and of course would have been joined with the local Muslims under Hashemi al-Husseini.
Wow.
So it's just a horrible distortion of reality. Even after World War II was over, the largest contingent of Nazis that got safe haven were in Egypt and Syria, and they had serious jobs. They worked to train the military. They worked to take the Islamic themes of anti-Semitism and transmit them to the Arab Muslim community with Nazi means of propagation. They didn't change the content. They basically, helped propagate the material. So to say these kinds of things that somehow, it was Palestinian martyrdom to save Jews or to create a space for them is the opposite. It was Palestinian Muslim martyrdom to slaughter Jews,
yeah.
if there was any such martyrdom.
Right. But, a lot of this, it's the PR stuff. It's, most people, they're counting on the fact that most people are utterly ignorant of all of this and would never even question them because that would be Islamophobic. But again, now you have this situation in Philadelphia that happened recently where I believe it was Memory had uncovered this, this video.
Memory and Steve Emerson. Steve might have gotten it before that.
Okay,
but they
Steve.
All worked, they all shared videos. Yes, absolutely.
At the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Right. Steve Emerson. Well, so there was this video of these kids talking about chopping off heads and about the Al-Aqsa Mosque and all this kind of stuff. And then you just have this, we're deeply saddened to have heard our partners in the Jewish community and beyond this, apology from the Muslim American Society's Philadelphia chapter and the leaders again.
And our friend Kanta Ahmed threw in to tell us on Fox News. I mean, this is how perverse it's all gotten.
Yeah.
That this had nothing to do with Islam.
No.
Is very philo-Semitic, et cetera. So you're getting it from the cultural jihadists, but you're also getting it from people that are embraced by conservatives, certainly by Fox News, who are giving really another form of apologetic when really this is, I'm sorry, but this is canonical Islam about beheadings. I mean, that's in Quran 8:12 and Quran 47:4. And the idea that the Jewish victims of these beheadings would be damned to hell is also Quranic. I went back to an analysis that was done, a great analysis, a really in-depth investigative reporting of the old style back in 2003. It was a 3-month investigation into textbooks that were being used across the New York City metropolitan area. And they were just rife with canonical Islamic Jew hatred. Mm. And this is what is routinely taught in these Muslim schools. Of course you're going to engender attitudes like this. But again, it's coming from the core texts and the core teachings, and it's endorsed by one of the textbook manufacturers since 2009 they have the world's 500 most influential Muslims. Well, one of the textbook manufacturers has been in that since it was first published in 2009 every single year. So I just think this is, we're just scratching the surface when a video like this begins to appear. These are the results of teachings that go on every single day.
Yeah.
And this is what people have to begin to wrap their minds around. I mean, are we going to tolerate this kind of indoctrination in mosques and Islamic centers across the country.
Well, that's right. So when you're talking about a broader problem of anti-Semitic speech and anti-Semitic attitudes in the United States, and we remind people about the horrors of the Holocaust and everything that Americans have known ever since it went on, how in the world do you simultaneously say, yeah, let's put more Muslims in Congress? This is awesome. Diversity. I mean, you can't have those two things simultaneously, can you?
No, and there is another problem. We are finding that there are small sort of loose networks of old style neo Nazis or young people that are crazed that are getting their own form of independent Jew hatred and radicalization. It's a concordance of the worst kinds of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And I think but the FBI, I will say one thing. The FBI has broken up 4 plots in the last 5 months that related to jihadists that wanted to kill Jews en masse.
Good.
I think one of the reasons that they've been unsuccessful with these two, neo-Nazi style attacks is that these people were less on the radar screen. And now hopefully they've learned. But I think these synagogues are at fault too. They have to have an armed presence. It's very unfortunate, but that's the way it has to be now.
Yeah.
Because they are getting some threats from neo-Nazis, and they still have this chronic Muslim threat.
Yeah, you're right. It's scary days we're living in. Well, when we're talking about the congresswomen, I also want to mention Ilhan Omar, because Pamela Geller was the one who pointed this out. Some of her links to the Muslim American Society. This is the group that was behind those kids talking about chopping people's heads off in Philadelphia. But she's the one who is sworn in into the Minnesota House with her hand on a Quran, and the president of the Muslim American Society chapter of Minnesota was standing with her. And I mean, there are other ties as well.
Which is Muslim Brotherhood.
It is.
Muslim Brotherhood. But again, Janet, we have to remember who the Muslim Brotherhood is. If you study them historically from their advent till now, they really are, I'm sorry, but they really are a very genuine reflection of garden variety Middle East Islam. That's really what they are in the end. And serious scholars who were honest in back in the day who studied them understood that. In fact, Charles Wendell, who translated Hassan al-Banna, the founder's tracts, he called them tracts, not treatises, he said that's exactly what he writes in his preface to these tracts by al-Banna, that this is, in the end, this is really a return to the golden age of Middle Eastern Islam. That's what they aspire to, and it's very popular. I'm not saying all, even Middle Eastern Muslims, adhere to going back to this Halcyon period of Islam, but many, many do. And their discourse has become the common discourse in the Middle East. And if so, of course, it gravitates where these populations migrate.
Right. Exactly right. So Americans need to be aware of what's going on. And I also want to refer people to your website. It's andrewbostom.org. And you can read more about Omar Suleiman and so many other good pieces that you've got at your site, Dr. Bostom. We so appreciate your voice. And I'm glad you were able to be with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again, Jennifer.
All
really
right.
Appreciate it.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye. Thank you so much, Dr. Andrew Bostom. Again, andrewbostom.org, and read his great stuff. By the way, we need your support for Alliance Defending Freedom's Freedom Fund. Please, if you can give a gift of $10 or $25 or $100 to fight back on behalf of our religious freedom in our courts today, they need your financial help. Please help out. 800-636-4042. That number, 800-636-4042. Or there is a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll see you next time.